Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Boulos. I'm a staff neurologist at Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center in Toronto, Canada, and also an assistant professor at the University of Toronto. My areas of interest are the association of stroke with sleep disorders. So you're asking is, what's the prevalence of this problem with stroke survivors, right?
Yeah.
So there are several different sleep disorders that can occur after stroke or after TIA. The most important and actually also the most common is obstructive sleep apnea, where patients will actually stop breathing temporarily in their sleep. And this occurs in 50 to 70% of stroke and TIA survivors, and is thought to be really the most important sleep disorder after stroke or after TIA. And sleep apnea has been shown to be an independent risk factor for death, for recurrent stroke, even for cardiovascular events. So its potential as a therapeutic target is very, very important in this population. Some work that I've been particularly interested in has been looking at restless leg syndrome, which occurs in about 5 to 10% of the population. Restless leg, and it probably has a similar prevalence after stroke as well. There are some case reports of restless leg syndrome arising after stroke. But again, from our estimates, the prevalence of restless leg syndrome is probably anywhere between 10 to 15% after stroke or TIA. Very closely related to restless leg syndrome are periodic movements of sleep, which are involuntary leg-kicking actions involving triflexion motions of the hip, ankle, and knee. And these movements are actually very, very common after stroke. There really aren't any prevalent studies looking at this, but we find that periodic movements are quite common, occurring probably in at least 40 to 60% of the population from our estimates from work that we're doing here in Toronto. And so these movements, in fact, may be important for transiently elevating blood pressure, but there have been a lot of sort of evolving work that suggests that they may be important in vascular disease, as has there been similar work for restless leg syndrome, but this remains an area of, still further investigation. We also note that a lot of patients have fragmented sleep after their strokes as well. Again, the prevalence isn't really clearly known, but this fragmented sleep may also have implications for vascular disease.
Some of your work involves imaging the brain to look at the characteristics in association to stroke and sleep disorders. What does this research tell us, and what are your findings?
So some of the work we've been doing has involved imaging the patients, imaging patients with detailed MR imaging, and then also looking at their sleep disorders. So a recent study that we published in the journal Sleep has shown that in patients who have fragmented sleep, and in fact these were mostly stroke in TIA patients, or at least patients being evaluated through a stroke clinic, we found that perivascular spaces, the spaces around blood vessels, in fact, were enlarged in people who had fragmented sleep or poor quality sleep. So this was a finding that potentially suggested that perhaps in these patients, the drainage of cerebral toxins, which are thought to occur through these perivascular spaces, these perivascular spaces were potentially plugged, and that fragmented sleep may have something to do with this. So this might be an important, therapeutic target down the line, where the sleep quality, sleep fragmentation, may be important in terms of the drainage of toxins through the brain. Our study was a preliminary study, but, ongoing work, I think, will expand on this and define its role in different populations. So that was one study that we've been working on.
I understand you've also been investigating the feasibility of using portable sleep monitors following a TIA or stroke. Can you tell us about that?
through my fellowship training in stroke and in stroke and in sleep disorders, we actually found that patients with cerebral vascular disease really did not like to undergo polysomnography. In fact, out of you know, hundreds of patients we approached, I found that only a very small percentage were interested in actually undergoing full in-hospital polysomnography. So what I quickly learned from my own research work as a junior faculty at the University of Toronto was that portable sleep monitors would be the solution to overcoming, you know, this, you know, quite a, you know, this pretty big deterrent in the form of in-hospital polysomnography. So some of my work has been using portable sleep monitors, either to detect sleep apnea or actigraphy to detect things like segmented sleep and periodic limb movements. And these certainly have a higher uptake, and as previous work has shown, in fact, are quite feasible in the detection of sleep problems after stroke or after TIA.
Okay, well, so where do you plan to take this research in the future?
I think the major thing that's missing right now in the study of sleep disorders and stroke is whether treating sleep apnea after stroke actually changes vascular outcomes and whether it reduces mortality. I think this is a major area of work that needs to be done. Right now, the current studies that have used CPAP for the management of sleep apnea after stroke or TIA have been fairly small studies. So I hope that the field in the future will take on very large studies, such as, involving like thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of patients, to randomize patients to CPAP or not after stroke. This will be, I think, this will be very, very, very important to show any mortality or vascular event differences, and will be a large advancement in the field. Failing that, other trials, and there are some trials right now posted on clinicaltrials.gov that are looking at vascular markers, so things like oxidative stress markers, inflammatory markers, and other biomarkers of clinical significance. These will also be very important studies, and I look forward to the results to see whether CPAP actually makes a big difference. The other thing is that CPAP itself is not really the ideal treatment for sleep apnea. I mean, it's very effective. It's really the best we've got right now. But for anybody out there wanting to really advance the field, looking for other cures or other treatments or other management strategies for sleep apnea will be very beneficial. We find that often stroke patients do not like using CPAP, and its usage is really quite poor, with compliance rates quite low. You know, you need a lot of TLC, a lot of support for patients to really stick with their CPAP. And so that's been a big challenging area in this work. And I'm hoping really that we'll be able to have a breakthrough of another management strategy that could benefit this very vulnerable and very important patient population. Another area that I find quite intriguing and exciting is this link of restless leg syndrome and periodic limb movements with vascular disease. And I think ongoing work will look at this and see whether in fact restless leg syndrome and the closely associated periodic rhythms of sleep have vascular implications, and whether treating them after stroke or TIA helps change clinical outcomes. So this will be, preliminary work, but I think it's important work since obstructive sleep apnea and restless leg syndrome, periodic rhythms do share some common mechanistic overlaps.
You've been listening to a podcast collaboration between the Canadian Stroke Congress and the International Journal of Stroke. The International Journal of Stroke is the flagship publication of the World Stroke Organization. Please consider opting in for membership to this important global work. Together we can change the global burden of stroke.